everybody. This is William Del Pilar. Welcome to another episode of Fired Up California, episode 14 to be exact. And as you all know by now, I sit there and bring you everything of note. Well, not everything, but everything important of note that you as conservatives and libertarians need to know to understand what we're up against. Because knowledge is power, my friends. And if we understand what's happening, we can win. All right, who am I kidding? We can try to win. We can try to compete. But you get my point. Let's put it this way. You're armed enough to go to your local representatives, and when they play the stalling game or the I wasn't aware of that game, you can inform them. Why? Because our Republican representatives tend to not really represent. But that is changing. As y'all know, we do have a new California Republican chair. Her name is Corinne Rankin. We are not going to talk about her today. But just to let you know, hope is hopefully on the way. As the Star Wars Episode 6, that is really the first original Star Wars, A New Hope may be on the horizon. And with that, let me stop babbling here and let me bring on my co-host, Gas. I don't know what it is yet. I lost my co-host, Tyler Collins, got a new gig. I think it was more to do with how I am politically. Not good for somebody starting a new job. But I'm going to bring in somebody who doesn't care. And he is known as, he is San Diego's local superhero, the G-Man.
Hey. How's it go? So there's somebody out there whose head is exploding right now because you called Star Wars Episode 6 A New Hope. And someone's going to say, no, that's Episode 4. That's Episode 4. He's wrong, which is true. Episode 6 was Return of the Jedi. So as, you know, for one of those
Star Wars purists
out there.
That's right. Duh. I apologize. You are right, because the first three are the pathetic, long, boring prequels. And then came into the original, which is right. Episode 4, Star Wars, A New Hope. The only reason that came to my head, G, is I subscribe to Hulu. For those of you out there, I don't like Disney, don't like ESPN, don't like. But that's the closest I get to cable streaming that has all the channels there. And right now, and they've integrated with Disney, and so they're kind of promoting the six Star Wars flicks. And before we move on real quick, I mentioned Star Wars. Just got to ask you, out of all the new Star Wars, I haven't seen the last two. I haven't seen the Han Solo. There's quite a few over the last 6, 7, 8 years I haven't seen. I think the last one I saw was the one where they kill off Mark Hamill, or he kind of dissolves into nothingness. But that said, I think the first one is the first three, that's it, I'm done, that's Star Wars. But I have to admit, the asterisk comes in with Rogue One. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, that's right.
That is one of the best Star Wars movies. If you play Halo, you love Halo 1, 2, 3, and then there's the Fall of Reach, kind of like the asterisk. That is just as good as the original. That is what Rogue One is. Are you a Star Wars fan?
Yeah, absolutely. I will have to say that Rogue One was excellent, but that one always leaves a pit in my stomach because you know in the end they all have to die, right? Because they don't show up in episodes 4 through 6. So you had to close off their story in that one episode.
I gotta be honest.
Unfortunate.
I gotta be honest. I don't know what the disconnect was, but I didn't get it till towards the end. I'm like, oh hell. These are the people who delivered to the princess at the end. I think. Right. I didn't know. I did, because it's been so long. And then when I saw the ending, I thought it was the coolest thing because the movie was so good. It worked. You know, like, I'll be honest, G, I fell asleep, on the first prequel. It was just long. It was like these long going soap operas. And, somebody said it best. Y'all talking about the new Star Wars has been ruined by Disney, et cetera, et cetera. No, Lucas did it with those boring prequels. I think he just, I don't want to knock Lucas.
Well, I will say that the prequels have had their own, ripening or aging like fine wine. So I think now people are like looking back going, hey, Hayden Christensen wasn't so bad. I think especially after 7, 8, and 9, but what I will tell you is I think where they messed up with Rogue One is making the actual movie end right where A New Hope starts. If they had actually had them escape with the plans of the Death Star, and then they could have made 3 or 4 other movies based on, you know, because you don't know how much time
hold on.
Elapsed
the
between
point.
The two movies.
You missed the point. I don't know where in Star Wars it says it, but she says something like, a lot of people died to get this to us or something like that. It's in the Star Wars.
Right.
So when they died, I'm like, but see, here's the thing, G. Every male is romantic. I'm going to die in battle, a hero. Boom. That was like the perfect way to go. They all died for the righteous cause. You know, it was like, it was magical because we know it's not real, obviously. And real life is not real. You know, I mean, you don't die romantically in battle. You die at times of slow. You want a fast death. If not, it's usually a slow, gruesome death. You know, so, the only downside I thought was, who's the Hong Kong actor that was in it? Gosh. Big time actor.
Kind of like the samurai, right?
I don't forget the role he played, but I'm like, there weren't enough fighting scenes with him. You got a guy who was a naturally gifted, actor there, and, they didn't maximize his talents is what I'm trying to say is that. But anyway, we've been on Star Wars too long, but you know, people, it's a connection. It's Hollywood. So that's in California. So
it was made in California. Yeah, that's right.
one of the few movies still made in California. Are you sure? I think a lot of it was made wasn't some of it made over in, Pinehurst in England?
It could be. Yeah. And Tunisia, of course, but I think a lot of it was also made in California, so.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Okay, people, we've got a great show for you tonight. Full of energy. I was a little down with the last podcast I did. I just got tired, but I'm full of energy right now, so that's good. We got a great show. We are going to talk again California issues. But before we do, let us remind you to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, grumblingsmedia.com. And you can follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. We just passed the 11,000 subscriber mark on YouTube. Thank you so much for that. We are exponentially growing there. Our podcasts are growing. For some reason, you're enjoying this beautiful mug. People, thank you for enjoying this beautiful mug. But, we're closing in on 12,000 already. So some good things are happening and we want you to stick around and join us and make sure you engage, and tell us what you think. So G, the first topic on hand is California Democrats stall on the urgent affordability crisis despite voter demand. So the affordability crisis. So Democrat leaders, they declare affordability, being able to afford to live in California. That is an urgent matter. Kind of like they view climate change, kind of like they view illegals. Kind of, you know, it's on top of the list. This was last year. We're already 6 months since then, and there's nothing that's been done. In fact, if I'm correct, they plan on having more meetings. Your thoughts?
Well, okay, so I thought this was hilarious that the same people who – created it, passed the gas tax bill back in, I think it was 2017, where our gas tax automatically increases every year on July 1st, just so that they don't have to vote on it, right? So it doesn't become a campaign issue every time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
These same people are now saying, well, fuel costs are too high. Well, gee, I wonder why. I mean, it's because of part, I mean, actually a big reason is the actual gas tax that we have here in California. When you go across the border to Nevada, this was back, 2 months ago. It was like $3 a gallon. Here it's, $5.20 right now.
Seven something in certain parts.
Yeah. So I think it's absurd because if they really want to get radical and just not, you know, play these kind of games, then they need to attack that. But going back to that bill, when I was looking at it, that actually got signed into law. The reason why they increase it is they wanted to keep up with inflation because the costs that this funds, you know, the cost of the roads and all that, that's right, going up with inflation too. So they give automatic pay raises to people who are working.
Oh,
so man. Now when you think about, okay, well, Gavin Newsom just signed into law the fast food workers are getting paid $20 an hour minimum. That's their minimum wage. Well, okay. Well, that's not going to have an effect on what we pay. I mean, I look at, you know, a McDonald's meal is like $15. So if you go to, you know, Jersey Mike's is like $20 for a sub. And, you know, it's a big one, but it's still pretty expensive now. And I just remember those were like, you know, $7-$8, I think right before COVID. So yeah, they're just talking out of their butt, obviously. Maybe for election reasons. I'm not sure.
You know, it's kind of early. I think it is because, you know, they're supposed to introduce three bills. It's not going to happen, but the lower energy costs, boost housing supply, and expand training. You're the economist out of the group. At the end of the day, I'm like, whatever you do that's artificial is going to backfire. I mean, and it's correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like you said, they're talking a lot of hot air out of their tush because when you artificially try to control the market, it always backfires. And until they let the free market begin to work, and granted, we have never, ever truly had a free market as much as we want one. But when you allow the market to be as free as it can, especially with housing, that will end up helping out. But before you come in on the housing and energy, I want to get specific on the energy. Two refineries are going to shut down in the next few months on top of the other refineries that have already shut down. And that's going to jack up costs as well. So it seems like they are only talking a game and because their actions show they're not serious about it. And you're right. I think it's a campaign tactic, but I think they're too fat and happy and don't realize a lot of these things they're saying now can be used against them, I think.
Yeah. And so the reason why, I mean, obviously the gas tax plus, you know, fuel over in Las Vegas, it doesn't equal $5.15 a gallon. It's the other thing about the summer blend. So when the summer blend comes into play or the California blend of gasoline, then you're introducing all these extra costs. And the mantra is always, well, we want clean air and we care about clean air here in California, unlike the other 49 states. Well, have you traveled lately? I mean, have you breathed the air in another state? It's clean. I mean, I'm not going there going coughing or I'm not seeing smog. Now we had smog issues back in the 70s and 80s, but I don't think it's the gasoline thing. It's the emissions thing from cars. So I think if we reduce the cost of fuel, which is an input cost into everything, right? The food you buy, gasoline costs is in there. When you drive to work, gasoline costs, et cetera, et cetera. You're the guy who's coming to fix your toilet, gasoline costs, right? Because he has to pay for that too. So in terms of housing, I remember I built a retaining wall in 2017. I had to get a permit. So I went down to San Diego County. And I applied for a permit and I paid, I think it was $500 or something like that, or maybe $400. And as I'm going through the different stations, the one guy who's an environmentalist guy, or part of the environmental agency or division, he looks at my plot of land and goes, oh, okay, your wall's here, your septic tank's here, you're good. That stamp is $300 or something like that. Oh, it was like the majority of the cost. And I'm sitting there going, are you serious? And he goes, yeah, you otherwise you can't build your wall without me. And I'm like, wow, this guy's on the power. But so I paid it. But if they just removed a lot of those regulations and the extra costs, I believe in California, just the cost to build an average 2,000 square foot house, 2,500 square foot house, it's $500,000. So you know nobody's paying less than $500,000 for a brand new house here in California. And that doesn't even include the land costs.
Yeah, it just I believe, we become too civilized. Sometimes I wish we were 200 years, 300 years earlier. Then we'd have a revolution and just. I think the problem with the world is and this sounds silly, but I truly believe in my heart it's true. When you look at history, every so often it could be a few hundred years, 1,000 years, there was a revolution and the slate would be wiped clean. Because the corruption was so bad, it was everybody was revolting. You know, the French Revolution, which was inspired by our American Revolution. You know, I think we've become so civilized. The government is so heavily armed. We become so fat and lazy. We tolerate it. So no, I agree. So my final question to you, G, and then we're gonna move on, is how should? Because I want people to leave here having hadn't thought of that or. Yes, I need to ask them or press them. But say that you put your consultant's role, your hat on. How would you go to a candidate and go, this is how you use this against the Democrats?
Well, first of all, you talk about all the taxes that they've raised. You talk about the regulation that they've put up there. But, you know, you talk about how they want to tax and spend, just like the Ronald Reagan approach. I mean, Trump wasn't so great at that. He would just, but Ronald Reagan was really good. I was actually watching some videos of him during his 1976 campaign when he was running against Ford, who was, you know, very moderate, very centrist. And Reagan came out against Ford saying, well, he's a tax and spender and the government's the problem and the government gets in the way. And when you talk about like washing out the excesses, like, you know, it really does take getting good people to run and to do that, to present a very clear message, right? That government's the problem. And here's the thing, like when you talk about, and here's what I've learned as when I ran for office and I was giving some speeches and, you know, I got the golf clap. And I'm like, why did I get a golf clap? And the guy next to me got the thundering applause. Because I said, well, I think California needs to put in good policies so you guys can get a job, work hard, and better yourselves. People don't want to hear that. They want to hear you're going to take it to the man. You just got to figure out which man you're talking about. Democrats are going to say the oligarchs, the CEOs. But Ronald Reagan was smart.
I got to ask you. I got to ask you this question. Yeah. I'm purposely interrupting. Yeah. You live in Rancho Santa Fe, and I'm not knocking rich, poor, or nothing. Yeah. But that's kind of like a different audience versus, say, if you were in Chula Vista, and we want policies so you can get a better job. I mean, am I overanalyzing it there?
No, so I was asked to speak outside of Rancho Santa Fe. I don't want to say the town. I don't want to alienate the group, but it was a little further down south from where I live. But, yeah, so that's not the message they want to hear. And, of course, like hardcore Reagan conservative people will say, I'm going to take it to the man, and that man is the politician who's running your life right now or is trying to run your life. Like these guys who raise the taxes and now are saying, well, wait a minute, it's too expensive to live in California. Like, no duh.
I got to admit, G, you're right. I have a two-tier mind. I always tell people, hey, I'll converse with you one-on-one. But you want to get into that screaming war? I will scream louder. And I'm equating that to the perspective of, if I'm talking to the audience, it's about sound bites. Take it to the man. It's Rivas who's screwing you over. Ugh. But then privately, when I'm talking about him, I go, yeah, but once we get him out, we have to create a policy, you know, that helps you, your son. And then if it's an older person, when it helps your grandson, that always gets him in the heart. Man, I am devious.
Well, I will say one thing, like George W. Bush in between, the George H.W. Bush too, but in between Ronald Reagan and Trump, you had the two Bushes, and they never really came across as fighters. And I think they won, especially George W. Bush. He won because he ran against two very weak candidates, right? Al Gore and John Kerry. But Trump comes along and says, I'm going to fight for you. And these guys are the enemy. And then all the attacks against Trump showed that he was correct, right? And it was a self-reinforcing prophecy. And I think that's why he won here in 2024. So I think it is a winning message, but these Democrats are trying to pretend like, okay, we're going to fight against our own party to reduce prices. Like that, are voters that dumb? I don't know. We'll see in 2026, next year.
I got a comment on that. Not good or bad, but the thing with Bush, he had that aw shucks appeal. But you're right. The problem with Gore and Kerry, they were bland, boring, no personality, and the internet was just getting going. Not a lot of people were on it. Bush, I mean, Dukakis, a new corpse, had more personality than Dukakis. I mean, for somebody to have less personality than George Bush, than George H. Bush, was tough, but they found it in Dukakis, you know? Yeah. And so I think, just hearing you say that, meaning, in a way, they were fluke wins. We had both Bushes were weak candidates. Because remember, Bush had a 90%, first Bush had a 90% approval rating after the invasion of Iraq, the first go around. And Clinton, who you may hate him, but man, that guy, boy, is like a used car salesman. By the time he's done with you, man, he's giving you his hot wife. Yeah, you can have her there. You know, Bill, you can have her, you know. That's how charismatic. That's how good. I think, and granted, we all know the Perot factor as well. But I think in this day and age, personality. I think you're seeing the exodus of all these boring, white, old country club people. And when I say white, I don't mean literally white, just the old pre-internet class. I mean, have you seen Nancy Pelosi today versus 35, 40? She's looking like a decrepit corpse, and she's entrenched, so she'll win. But moving forward after she leaves, it's about personality. And I think that because we live in that type of era now, you know. Anyway,
yeah, right.
Any final comments you want to tell the audience here on Broken Promises?
No, I mean, I think I said my piece on it.
Vote G! All right, so let us move on. Most Californians favor citizenship to vote, a poll finds. Oh, yeah, Essa, you got your ID? No, I'm an illegal. I'm privileged. And the American California say, no, you're not. So the Public Policy Institute of California, the PPIC, you missed last episode, G. There were, I can't remember what podcast. Oh, it was the transgender. It was like two or three agencies in the government are suing like two agencies. And they all had these long names. But then they're referenced by their initials. It was like a who's on first type stick. But anyway, it was just hilarious. And I purposely started screwing it up. Not screwing it up, but just using the acronyms. And I would tell the audience what it was. Anyway, sometimes I'm too cute. My point, so the public policy, the PPIC conducted a poll, and it shows widespread support for requiring proof of citizenship. It was conducted this past year, late 2024, and in my notes, I have a pivotal moment in California, a progressive state grappling with national election integrity debates. In other words, it just speaks the truth that people are okay with common sense. Yeah, if you want to vote, you need an ID. And let's talk about that, G. First of all, the poll's there, so it's got to be true. It was survey included approximately 1,500 California adults. It ran for a week, so it was probably more of a survey done. Survey included respondents were asked about support for a constitutional amendment requiring proof of citizenship, and 61% of the respondents supported the amendment. And so the breakdown. 82% of Republicans obviously supported it, but 48% of Democrats supported the amendment. Now, granted, that still disappointed me. If it was 52, 54%, I'm like, holy mackerel, 48%, that's close. But the lies are still being told and believed. Independents were 60%. So to me, I don't care if it's 48%. To me, this is probably two-thirds of Californians think that we do need a constitutional amendment for that. But the problem is, this is one of the times where the Republicans, I mean, the Democrats are saying, screw you, I don't care. And I think because the media protects them, this message is going unheard. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I looked further at the poll. In California, I believe it was 71% of Californians were okay with just requiring proof of citizenship in order to register to vote, but in order to vote, to show up at the polls and have your ID with you, it dropped to 54%. But that's still a huge win in California, because when you think of, you know, the governor's race or even the presidential race, I mean, the Democrats are winning 55-45, but yet there's enough crossover votes, at least on the Democrat side, to say, no, I think we should make sure that citizens only are voting. And it's not only just the case. So you register to vote. You show an ID to register to vote. But then you show up at the poll and, you know, I'm not going to use the accent that you use, but you say, oh, I think my dead neighbor didn't show up, so I'm going to show up in his place and vote and, you know, notch another vote or two in, right? Like, that could happen. Now, whether it happens in enough numbers, probably not. But I think it's just good to preserve the integrity of the election. Because if it's happening at least once, then you don't know how many other times it's happening, right? So it could be once, it could be 100 false votes, it could be 100,000, it could be a million, like you don't know. So anyone who says that they know that this is not a big problem, they're just making it up. Because
they're lying.
Yeah, because they don't know how many there are. So that's the thing. And once the vote's in there, you can't take it out. So there was that case in this past election. Some guy in Michigan, he was, I believe, an illegal immigrant. casted a vote, and then they found out he casted a vote, but then they can't get his ballot out. Because what's he going to say? Right. Well, if he voted for Kamala, he's going to say, well, I voted for Trump. And then they say, minus one for Trump, right? So right. Once the ballot's in, it's in. You can't say, okay, well, this guy voted illegally. We got to take one vote away. But he's going to lie about that, right? Because he lied about voting in the first place. So I'm encouraged by that. I believe Carl DeMaio is pushing a vote next year, right? Is that a proposition?
Right. I'm concerned about that, though. If he's doing that in Congress, that's fine. But he was supposed to raise money and get a prop or something done, and he raised a lot of money, and there was not one signature did. So you got to be a little wary of that. But maybe as an assemblyman, he can actually get a bill. But let's be honest. So I'm going to push back on that. So what, G? Let's say he gets a bill in there. How far is that bill going to go? Is it even going to get out of committee?
No, but the attempt needs to be made, right? You got to fight, and that means you might lose a lot of battles, but eventually you will win, and you're winning the hearts and minds. So I get what you're saying. Like, okay, if you don't eventually win this battle this time around, is it worth doing? I think it is. So I watched this thing about the election of 76, and Ronald Reagan ran hard, and he lost by, I think it was like 68 votes in the delegate during the convention.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That really set him up for 1980. It set him up perfectly to win in 1980. So you got to fight and make the advance so that you eventually do win.
No, I get that. I think a better approach would be to gauge to see if there's enough signatures out there to get this on the ballot. That'll make national news. And that'll set it up and send a signal. And it's also something you can campaign on. And the whole party can wrap around that. Carl DeMaio sadly has already made a lot of enemies, and you know politics. Some Republicans won't even campaign on it because they don't like him. That's just how politics work. So I think you put it on a ballot. There's enough signatures. That sends a big message, and it's a campaign topic that is not just for the legislature. The dog catcher can run on that, just because of that you know, it's in people's ears. So that's how I view that. To the audience, this is when I get angry. By law, I am a brown man. Ooh, I'm looking brown today. As G say, boy, you don't know what
the contrast
brown is.
Here visually isn't there, but I make you look very white.
Yeah, there you go. G's making me look white. I'm brown, damn it. Yeah, of course I'm joking, but Latinos, I say this to Latinos and blacks. This is when I get angry. The Democrats play the card that they're doing it to protect black and brown. And there's a video out there by Amy Horowitz. I've sent it to G and others over the years. And they're talking, a lot of them are young and old. Well, you know, blacks, they don't know where the DMV's at. You know, they may not have internet. And if you're Kathy Hochul, the governor, they may not know what a computer is. I mean, they use all these stupid excuses so they can get the fix in. And let me tell you, black and brown, to my fellow Latinos, they're not helping us. That gas tax, you're going and filling in your tank, aren't you? They want a mileage tax next. And y'all poor like us, I live in the rural area, driving to San Diego so I can pay $500 permit fee, and then another $300 permit fee is going to be on top of another $100 to drive down there. So they're using us when they play this black and brown game to protect us. And gee, if you haven't seen it, you got to see it. The Amy Horowitz, he goes into Harlem. You know, I think he's like in Brooklyn or some other state or somewhere. Then he goes into Harlem. And it's my favorite one is the guy, the black guy, he's looking around. Am I on candid camera? You know, candid camera somewhere, because I can't believe he just asked that. But there's a term for it, but it's a subconscious form of racism.
The liberals call it implicit bias to make it sound a little nicer, that you're not fully racist, you're only a little bit racist.
Yeah, it's white superiority complex. Actually, it's just a superiority complex. It's not really white. It's just they think they're smarter. And they think it's their responsibility to help us dumb folks, you know? I saw that almost every day growing up with my mom. And they don't mean it, but they do it. So just never forget that, my friends. All right, I'll give you the last word here. Any final topics on?
I watched that. I've watched other ones where they go out on the street and say, hey, our white liberal friends are saying that black people don't have driver's licenses or IDs, don't even know where to get it, or don't even know how to do anything with it. And they're highly offended by that thinking. And it is racism, right?
They should be.
Yeah, it's terrible because I don't know anybody who is of driving age who doesn't have a driver's license. I mean, they all do, and I don't care what race they are. I know they all have driver's licenses. So
No, G. In Africa, they're still walking with the robe and the cane, playing the role of Moses.
But then we even talk about the illegal immigrants. The same people say, okay, well, we want illegal immigrants to get driver's licenses, but they're not handing out flyers saying, well, here's the DMV and here's how to do it because you're too stupid. No, they're not doing that because they know it's not that hard. It's just a talking point that they're using. But we know that, okay, to preserve the integrity of our elections, this is the right thing to do. One thing I will add, one last thing, is all these IDs should be free. They should make the driver's license or the state ID completely free for anyone to apply and get it, because now it's a condition for voting. So now we don't have this poll tax argument coming across. So it will be completely free. Okay, they lose $30 on the driver's license revenue, but I guess to preserve the integrity of our election, that's a good thing to do.
Oh, I agree. There's a great video after Kathy Hochul said that black people may not even know what a computer is. If this black guy, he put it on Twitter, and he's acting like remember 2001 with the cavemen, where they're kind of like, he's actually acting like a gorilla, hitting the computer, like, what's this, what's that? And to me, it was a viral hit, because to me, in my heart, that's how some people look, want us to look at them. Yeah, they know that's not true, but they want to portray them. And I'm like, that was a great satire because it showed how Kathy Hochul, and Kathy Hochul is the governor of New York, for those of you who don't know. It's just disgusting. It's just disgusting. All right, let us move on. The Assembly Republicans secure victory as Democrats capitulate on sex trafficking of 16 and 17 year old. So this deals with Assembly Bill 379 and the passage. And this is a rare victory for Republicans. And I think what happened, common sense, not for the greater good of the constituent, but common sense come election time, got through to the Democrats. So in essence, where is this? AB 379 was co-authored by Maggie Krell. She was the main author of it, the Democrat. And Shannon Grove, who G and I know, she doesn't know me, but I've met her a few times, aimed to make soliciting sex from anyone under 18 a felony, to close a loophole that was allowing the Scott Wiener types to be predators towards 16 and 17 year olds. I said Scott Wiener types. I didn't say Scott Wiener, you know. So the bill, which classified child sex trafficking as a serious felony, it hit immediate roadblocks because they wanted to pull that out. Gee, before we get any deeper into that, your initial thoughts on the fact that this bill got stalled even before it got started, and your thoughts on the fact that Krell was kind of kicked off it, you know, because she's a Democrat, because she wouldn't go along. She God bless that woman, Democrat or not, she stuck to her guns. No, those are predators. That's trafficking. And the Democrats kicked her off working on that bill. Your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, legislation's crazy, right? Because you pass something that you think will work, and then all of a sudden there's a loophole, or there's not a loophole, but it's so rigid that you're causing things to happen that you don't want to happen. And I guess the amendment that they're trying to work on, or the modification, was, well, what if it's a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old, right? And the one is like right on the cusp, and they wanted to make sure, okay, well, you're not throwing in an 18-year-old, or are my numbers right? Maybe it's a 16 and a 17, but you don't want to throw in a 17-year-old into jail because, you know,
this
is really meant
to
be for adults, right?
Right. But the example, and then you can continue, is to the audience. Think of it like this. Your kid is 17, 16, 17. The girl's 15, they're dating through junior high and high school, and the kid turns 18 and she still stays 16 going on 17. That's the type of scenario they're trying to portray. But that tends to be the exception a lot. I just wanted to clarify so the audience could understand.
Right. And I can understand that. I mean,
exactly.
I'm not going to push my morals on them. Like, don't do it. But it happens. And then what are we going to do? Throw a bunch of 18-year-old Stanford people into jail because they, like you said, they had a girlfriend for 2 years and one of his friends turned him in saying, well, this guy was sleeping with his girlfriend. I mean, that's not the society we want to be. So I think it was good to stall and say, okay, well, let's look at the legislation and make sure that we don't have another loophole or another unintended consequence. So I think it was good to do that. And I'll give credit to the Democrats. I believe they were the ones saying, let's hold up a second because that's our
concern. Well, hold on. I got to push back because you're right. I agree with you 100%. Other bills like this have been passed. There should be enough legalese that has been created. They can put that in. But they're talking about, no. We can't make it a felony if somebody who's 18 wants to give somebody who's 16 or 17 $20 for sex. That's what they're saying. Or to do sex tricks. Now, even and my point is exactly they're pimping sex trafficking. And my point is, if an 18-year-old who's been dating a girl for 17, if a 17-year-old's dating a 16-year-old and offers her $20 for sex, if I'm that 16-year-old's daughter or father, I'm beating the hell out of that kid. My point is that's still not acceptable, even in the acceptable scenario we gave, where we got to keep our eyes open because if they were under 18 at the time, then one turns 18, the other's still 17. You know, you got to make an exception. They're trying to conflate that into money, saying, no, we can't prosecute if somebody chooses to pay a 16-year-old for sex. You know, so I got to push back on that because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to conflate those two.
Yeah, and I get that. So I mean, just paying for it is illegal, and it doesn't matter what their age is, right? And it doesn't matter how much it is either. I mean, $20. I thought they would adjust for inflation during Biden's term. That should be $30 by now.
So the public backlash, I think, is this: the Republicans, because it's so reprehensible, were able to get this out and frame it as sex trafficking. Democrats had a cow. But I don't want to get too much off topic, G, but my wife's a hairdresser. Her brother was gay, died because of pneumonia, but AIDS. I've met a lot of his friends. So it's been years now. But we got to know the culture, the industry. And I always noticed this grooming of young kids. And I'm not talking about a 20-year-old comes up to me. I'm talking about like a 16-year-old be like a 20-year-old. I was naive enough, because I met the people, I like them, good people like that. I was naive enough to think, okay, they're gay, they're coming out, they're strangers alone. Here's a gay man to help him show the way. Not realizing until later on, they weren't showing him the way. They had a new sex toy, is what it boiled down to. And in my heart, that's what the Scott Wieners want to protect, is that. And my proof is, remember Milo? I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Do you remember from Breitbart? Milo Yiannopoulos or something like that?
Yeah. I don't remember his last name.
Yeah. So he got fired for saying that. And he wasn't saying that. He was saying, that's the culture. And Sulu, George Takei, said something similar in a now deleted tweet. Breitbart caught it and put it in the article, why Milo being given a third degree and Sulu isn't. But my point is I don't think Sulu was meaning either one. They were just saying, that's our culture, you know? And that's – give me some pushback. I mean, I'm hoping wrong.
No, I mean, you're giving this example because of your wife's – what did you say, her brother?
No. Just I got to know the culture. I got to know a lot of gay individuals, and that's what I saw.
What I'm saying is it happens in all cultures, right? I mean, you got older men, you know, using girls and boys and or whatnot. I mean, there was a school teacher, you probably saw in the news, this past week. She was sentenced to 30 years, based out of San Diego, and she was grooming her, I forgot what grade it was, but it was the boys in her classroom. So it's a woman on boy crime. So it's all, you know, I'm not going to single out any single culture.
Oh, I will. No, yeah. You're right. It does happen across the board.
Yeah.
But it seems to be very predominant in that culture. That is per Milo, when he was talking about it, breaking down and per what I see. Again, I was naive, and maybe it is, you know, I'm going to help you around, kid. No, not sex, but I'm going to help you around. But it seems to me that that's what the Scott Wieners are protecting. I mean, let's be honest. Scott Wiener has tried every which way. What's his name? Every which way but loose. Well, in that case, it is loose. he's tried every way to get these bills passed that protect pedophilia or grooming in a way. And he frames it in a way where it looks legit, but when you take that closer look, all the scenarios just start screaming at you. So if anything, Wiener is helping to typecast or stereotype his own culture by these laws he's trying to pass. And again, not to gross everybody out, but they want kids at gay pride parades, and the gay pride parade in San Francisco had men openly giving fellatio, oral sex, and then immediately urinating on the guy right afterwards. That was caught on film. So again, a lot of innuendos, but I'm like, things that, you know, if it walks like a duck, what's that saying? Quacks like a duck, sheds water like a duck, it's a Scott Wiener.
So, Scott Wiener related to Anthony Wiener?
I know, no.
Who
no,
tanked Hillary's campaign or yeah, was no, actors?
No, he's not. But Scott
he was all about the women.
But Anthony Scott Wiener's ex-wife, Huma, remember Huma?
Anthony Wiener.
Yeah, that's Anthony Wiener's ex-wife, Huma Abedin. Yeah. She's married now or in a close relationship with Alex Soros.
Yep, that's right.
Man, talk about incestuous in a party. All right.
Socialists attract each other.
Yeah, there you go. So this has been stopped, or actually it's going to go through more changes. Hopefully it'll get down there. I think what's going to happen is they're going to try to suppress this bill until after the next election, and then it'll rear its head. But if I'm the Republicans putting on my cap, I'm telling them, you campaign on this, and you name names. And I don't care if their name's not attached to the bill. If they haven't said a word about the bill, the fact they haven't spoken up against the bill means they're for the bill. Why? Because it's the Democrats. It's just a great strategy. You know, kind of like how they try to attach Trump to every Republican candidate regardless. We need to do more of that with this bill, because it doesn't matter if it's a black woman, a Latina woman, a white woman, or an Asian woman. They don't want, if it's little Lupita's walking to school, she doesn't want Jose Cuervo, you know, at that street corner. You know, here's El Yesita, come here, $20. Yeah, they don't want none of that. Yeah, all right. Let's move on here, G, before I get you in trouble. So, the next story up is whistleblowers accuse L.A. homeless official of misconduct, sparking outrage. This is a story I have been following throughout the last, since I started Fired Up California, and this is it just keeps growing. So, a Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority manages over $700 million annually to address L.A. homeless crisis, with 75,000 unhoused people countywide. Valicia Adams Calhoun. She has faced whistleblower accusations of misconduct. Now, to get to the chase, they've been accusing her, not major stuff, but just abusing the party, using money for trips, for parties, for dinners, things like that. But these are six-figure salaries that these people also earn. So Kellum's earning $430,000. This is a nonprofit. As CEO, she's hired unqualified friends, nepotism here or cronyism, and they're all earning six figures. My point to the audience is these whistleblowers are important, because 2 weeks ago, where has the money gone? There was a big, they were starting to do audits. The federal government got involved because they could not account for hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of the $24 billion. They're like, billions. They don't know where it's gone. This is kind of like peeling back one of those layers, G. In the grand scheme to the audience, this is how Democrats reward their activism. If you're an activist and you work for a Democrat party, a candidate or something, And then you're going to be rewarded because they want you to keep working for them. They want you to grow that baseline structure that's out there campaigning, knocking on doors. So they go, hey, who's this woman? Say, hey, Kellum, hey, Christina. You know, Christina got the job for you. You're going to work at a nonprofit. We're going to make you the CEO. Well, I really don't like that or care for that. $450,000. Boy, I've always wanted to help the homeless. Yeah, yeah. And by the way, wink, wink, you can hire who you want. Wink, wink, meaning hire all your friends. And this is how the corruption happens. This is how they take care of their activists. The Democrat Party doesn't pay a dime, and it's the taxpayer that's footing the bill. What I'm telling you people here is not an outlier. It's common across the country. The Democrats have perfected it. And it's not just this way. We're not going to talk about it, but just AdBlue is another funneling system too. Let's just stay on the homeless, G. Your thoughts. Is anything I'm saying no truth to it? What are your thoughts when you hear a case?
No, So she was hired in March of 2023. And then all of these allegations started coming out in July of 2023. I mean, you're talking 4 months. I mean, that's not a lot of time. And so there's already a certain amount of corruption within her, right? That she would move. When you think of like any human being in a spot for too long, say 10, 15, 20 years, start to get comfortable. You start to take shortcuts, start to become a little more corrupt every single time. Right? So that's just kind of natural. So that's why you need a shakeup. But she took 4 months and now she had insiders. So I'm not against hiring people that you know, because when you want to form an organization, you need to bring in people that you trust, right? And that you can work with. The problem is if they're not qualified at all, then what were they doing? Were they doing the work? Were they competent enough to do the work, or were they just there to collect salaries protected by her?
So well, let me pause you.
Yeah.
$24 billion, the homeless problem has grown. So I think that answers your question.
Yeah, exactly. So, and not only that, but we've talked a lot about this often, but you look at Santa Monica, the promenade, and the whole Venice Beach, Santa Monica Pier area, and people are getting stabbed and beat up by homeless people. I mean, the problem is worse. And we used to live down there, 2018, 2019 time frame, and it was safe to walk. Now, you know, I watch these YouTube videos of people taking videos along the promenade and windows are broken and stores are boarded up. And, you know, for those TDSers who say that's all Trump and the tariffs. No, this was videos from a year or two ago. This is during the Biden term. So it had nothing to do with the president. It had everything to do with what's happening in California and the soft on crime approach. And that's why Proposition 36 passed. And yeah, I think the homeless problem has gotten worse. The crime problem has gotten worse. And I think Californians are fed up. I hope the Republicans can really capitalize on that.
And real quick, it's gotten worse, but the data doesn't say it's gotten worse. But when you remove misdemeanors and you don't prosecute felonies, the numbers make it look better. But the crime has gotten worse by just the environment you see. Okay, so G and I have given you our big political thoughts. Let's get down to a few details here, G. Kellum, as I told you, has earned, what was it, $400,000. She has $430,000 as CEO. She withheld accurate data on Mayor Karen Bass's Inside Safe program to avoid negative perceptions. She was cooking the books. She reportedly used personal stuff. That's a little stuff there. She hired unqualified little stuff. Where'd it go? Okay. She proposed using public funds for an open bar. She signed, but here's the big kicker. I was looking at, there's an email she had retracted or told don't send out to protect her friend from something bad or showing the city was doing, the numbers weren't working right. But here's the big one, G. She signed a $2.1 million contract with Upward Bound House, her husband's employer. When she was told it was illegal, she reacted angrily. And I think one of the whistleblowers she fired. She also failed to commission a neutral investigation into these allegations. And at the end of the day, she used $800,000 to pay off the whistleblowers. This is hard, concrete evidence. Your thoughts? I think it's the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I mean, again, a lot of this is allegedly, but the $2.1 million contract is established, and the $800,000 settlement to, you know, settle the complaints is also, you know, fact. But that, you know, that's raising questions. Is this a payoff, right? So, I mean, it just seems like there's so much happening with this one situation here that it demands an investigation. So she also deleted some emails to protect the sender. I don't know why she would need to protect the sender, or allegedly instructed aides to delete them. I'm not sure if they were actually deleted, but it just looks like, okay, maybe she didn't know. And then they said, you can't do that. And she relented. Or did she say, no, you better do that? And they did that. There are a lot of questions there. I think a lot of investigations need to happen.
Exactly. Again, and as a campaign tactic, your tax dollars, you can't afford gas, can't afford to buy a house, they want to book gas mileage, they want sexual assaults, the crime, all that. These are great campaign tactics, and well, where's your proof? Mrs. Kellum. She is just the tip of the, man, see, Democrats know how to campaign. It's like, what's it saying? This is like low-hanging fruit. And it's like the guy goes, and they keep missing it, like a bad Jerry Lewis comedy. They keep, can't grab it. It's low-hanging fruit on here. What do you want to see out of this? I want to see two things, G. I want to see the Republican Party properly use this as a campaign tactic. But more importantly, I want the feds to come in and investigate this and not stop till they root out all the corruption, because I bet you this corruption goes up to the state level, the people who are dishing the money out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there needs to be investigation from quote-unquote neutral parties. That would be the feds. But, you know, honestly, I mean, I look at the big cities. You got L.A., you got Chicago. I mean, Chicago has a reputation going back 100 years of Democrat corruption, and they've never voted Republican, not that city. The state, Illinois, has, but not the city. So New York City, do I have any hope that L.A. will become Republican because of this? No. Or anything remotely because of this? No. But I do think that, there should be some fed upness on the side of the public across California, maybe outside of California, to say, we're done with the crime. Now we're also done with this crime. Like, if this was a crime and it's rooted out and investigated, then we're done with this. We need to clean up Sacramento as well. But I think Karen Bass, I mean, she has to go. That is clear. LA is just gotten worse and worse under her time there, and she has to go.
I agree.
And LA was fired up earlier this year, right?
Literally.
Yeah, literally. So she has to go.
Not metaphorically, literally. I love doing this impersonation. Miss Karen Bass. That airport impersonation. You know, real quick, I don't know. I think if there's any city in America that can turn eventually Republican, it's like Miami, L.A., some of these Latino urban, Austin. That it's just the Democrats have such a stronghold. It's become liberalized. But I think we've stopped messaging as a country. Patriotism is seen. Bill Maher, I don't know if you watch him, but I don't watch him, but I saw snippets of it. And I guess they were talking about a poll that like, over 50% of young under 30 believe America's bad, terrorists good. Of course, I'm very simplifying it, but there's that. That's the mentality. And I think before we were born, it was the hippies, and now they're in power. And we've got to find a way to stop that cycle because it's killing us in the big cities. Texas will go purple, not because of the state, but because all the population is going to Austin, the Dallas, the Fort Worth, and that's what happened in California. As big as California, we are ruled because of the voters in L.A. and San Francisco, for the most part. So I hope that does change. Okay, our final story, I think, before we get to the Cali Blitz here, G, I wanted to talk about the Chinese influence and how powerful it is. When people have a bad mentality, excuse my French here, I'm trying to cut down on the sailor talk. Well, that shit don't happen in America when you talk about, you know, spies and all that, and they're stunned. Well, how dare we spy on Greenland? How dare we? How dare we, G? You know, when it's done by every country. But I wanted to bring this story up. Chinese influence targets local Arcadia politics in long-term strategy. Gee, do you think that – I think the average lifelong generational California has heard of Arcadia. But I bet you the average Californian does not know Arcadia. What's that? Is that an arcade? My point is, small town, but the Chinese influence, it goes everywhere. It goes deep. An Arcadia City Council member, Eileen Wang – a 12-year-old in me comes out. Eileen Wang, she faced scrutiny because her former fiancé had Chinese government ties. And through him, they were using him to begin grooming her. The only reason she's not with him anymore is because the story became public. Your thoughts, I truly believe in my heart, this is how powerful and smart the Chinese, the Russians. They look at the long game. America, for some reason, does not. Your thoughts on this Chinese influence starting in a small town? Because, people, the goal is that Ms. Wang would move up the ranks, eventually wind up in the state, the assembly or the Senate, and then from there maybe insurance commissioner, secretary of state, lieutenant governor. That's how they look at, they're building a roster out, and this is the minor leagues. Some of them will make it. Some of them won't. Is that – I think I'm looking at it properly. Please poke some holes in my theory. I want them poked. I want them poked harder than Scott Wiener dreams of.
I think it is, and it's not – I mean, this campaign was small, right? I think her opponent on the Republican side, which, by the way, she went Republican to Democrat during that election. But her opponent self-funded himself. He's a Taiwanese immigrant, and – I think he had $34,000 in his campaign. She had like $110,000 or $120,000. So I believe the Chinese did shuffle some money or launder some money towards her campaign by way of her boyfriend's, again, allegedly, but by her boyfriend's connections or whatnot. And I believe he's a Chinese national, right? Is my fact there correct?
Yeah, that's what I got out of it too.
Yeah. So I think you're right. I mean, it's small potatoes. I mean, that's not a lot of money, but you get someone in there and then they're beholden to you, or at least, I mean, so I'm not so convinced that she knew that this came from China, but maybe the donors, like she knows who the donors are, and then maybe they're the ones who are in cahoots with China and she's beholden to them, right? Because they're the ones who funded her campaign. So I think that might be one layer of abstraction that she wasn't aware of. And just to give her the benefit of the doubt, because again, all this is allegedly, but you're right. I mean, so then you have this Manchurian candidate version, you know, local style, but you know, then you work that way up, California as they run for citywide office or statewide office. So it is disturbing, and I'm sure she's not the only one. I'm sure Chinese have donated to other campaigns in the past.
Well, let's be honest here. Oh my God, Swalwell, Fang Fang. You know, we don't know how deep it is. The media protected him. She shoot it 20 plus years. Diane Feinstein. Did she die? Did she pass away? I think she did, didn't she? Diane Feinstein, a longtime senator from here. Her chauffeur. 20 years, Chinese spy. So and there's a Russian spy that defected. I want to say, I can't remember his name. We've all seen the video of him saying, look, the Soviet Union's plan is to take you out long term, you know, through your education. But my point is they look at things as a long game. China themselves had said, we play the long game. China, here's the dirty little secret. Y'all laugh when Trump sat there and put some hold on trying to stop the men over in China from having relations with the Chinese women. It's because they send women out. You're going to hit on this guy. You're going to pick on this guy. Fei Feng, that's what she was. So this is something that they are looking in the long game. We had there was a U.S. Senate candidate that came out of nowhere. I want to say 2016, 2020, who almost got the endorsement, didn't have enough stuff, was pissed off, was fighting it. A year or two later, because he was a nobody, came out of nowhere. He was charged with ties with the Chinese, and they had funded. He was married to a Chinese national, you know? So they are within our politics, and this is a scary thing. This happened in 2022. It just came to light. G hit the numbers pretty well. I think it's a big concern. I think we don't take it, we take it too lightly because, excuse my French, that shit don't happen here, William. What you talking about?
Let me give some other numbers. So it looks like the Chinese newspaper contributed 6,000 to a campaign and then received about 4,000 from a couple other Chinese sources. So you're looking at 10,000 out of 120. So it's not a big amount. It's not the game changer of the campaign. But I
No, hold on, G. Hold on. In those small elections, those are game changing numbers. The other candidate only had 38,000. So 110,000, he's got triple of what she does. I'm not meaning to poo-poo you. I'm saying we have to put the money in perspective too. You know, it's a very small race. That's a big difference.
But this is about buying a lottery ticket, right? Like you go and put everything, you know, at the roulette table and put it on 35, and then it's like 1 in 35 chance. Like a lot of things have to go right, and they're like, okay, well, $10,000, let's just see. Then, you know, we can get her up to governor one day, and maybe, you know, we'll score big or whatnot. But, you know, this is a scandal, but it's not a big political scandal like, you know, someone in the state assembly or governor's race. But we'll see what happens. I'm going to keep an eye on this for sure.
You're right. But see, that's my whole point when I said the minor leagues. It's like a team drafts a bunch of minor. They have a whole farm system. Out of that farm system, only a handful, I don't know, 3-5% are going to make it to the major leagues.
Isn't there a huge Chinese and Taiwanese population in that area? So maybe it's more about affecting the populace and trying to get the Chinese message out to them and make, you know, get more spies, I guess, or whatnot. Maybe there's a different game that's going on.
There were 2.9 times more Asian residents in Arcadia than any other race or ethnicity. It's a hotbed of Asian. That's where a lot of Asians go, I guess, which just makes it easier for the Chinese to infiltrate. Because look, if they can get that person, it actually makes it much easier. Then they don't have to go. You're not going to see, hey, go vote for Sun Lee. Where are you from, Compton? You know, you're not going to get that. You get them at Arcadia. Once they reach a certain point, it doesn't matter where they started from. It's a matter of marketing their name to become a statewide name, you know? Look at Jim Desmond, San Diego maybe, but he's up here in the rural area. Nobody's going to ever remember. They're going to think San Diego, you know, as he moves and marches up on. All right, it's something to keep an eye on. You know, G, I have jokingly said, but I told my wife one day, you know, we have an old picture of where he was Chinese in our family. My brother's half Japanese. You know, I told her, if that stuff comes out and I'm a young guy, I had no doubt a Chinese official, if they had the opportunity, found out, would approach me. That's how corrupt politics are. That's how powerful the Chinese arm that I truly believe with something like that.
Well, let me give you a different angle that as you're talking, I'm thinking about, like, what would be the motivation? Because this is way too small potatoes, right? Unless your opponent is Taiwanese and you don't want the Taiwanese guy to get in there with a big Asian population and give whatever little contracts that the city might give to Taiwan-based companies. You want them to come to Chinese-based companies. So maybe there's something there. And, you know, those things could be worth millions and millions of dollars for the price of a $10,000 donation.
That's what they're going to groom them for, to be in position to make deals like that. I mean, look at Tim Walz. I mean, things that make you go, how many trips, 20 trips you took, Tim? You know, really? It's like it wasn't out of the kindness of their heart. At that point, they're like, come here, Tim. Yeah, I was going to say essay, but whatever they say.
I don't know what they're
saying. All right. I don't want to keep G. We're ready at an hour mark, so we're going to rip through some of these as a true lightning round should be. We call it the Cali Blitz, my friends. It's where I take stories that are still very important, but we're just not going to spend a lot of time on them. They may expand and grow in future weeks. We'll take a closer look at them, but for now we're just going to give you our thoughts. And gee, what I like to focus on is giving it from the conservative point of view in terms of how it affects us, a tidbit of information that they can remember and make use of themselves, and as they educate or try to convince a hardcore liberal, you know, hey, look at it this way. The first one up, concerns over toxic materials from the Palisades fire on local beaches. So the Palisades fire, the runoff is a toxic, all the toxic waste. And beaches, they're telling people you can't go into the beaches, the water, etc., because of the hazardous materials like asbestos with lead. Cleanup costs are at $24 million for 40,000 tons of debris. And they, all they're talking about, G, here right now is beach monitoring. You know, and they're testing for safety. And I'll start off with an example. My take is, it's another example for politicians, especially in LA area, to point out the incompetence of the Democrats to go along with the 100 days, 12 permits in Palisades. Your thoughts on this story from KTLA News.
The number one thing that LA needs to be doing, Karen Bass and all the other people, is rebuilding. And when you rebuild a home, first thing you do is clean up. I don't know what they're doing, but asbestos is highly dangerous. Just even one whiff of it, it gets in your lungs, could cause cancer 20 to 30 years down the road, even though it's just one whiff of it. So I don't understand why they're not cleaning up. This is 4 months later, and they're incompetent up there. I mean, $24 million, that's it? That's all it takes? They need to get on it, like ASAP.
Yeah, I agree. And are you climate-loving, tree-hugging people who look at the animals in the same way? How many animals are being affected by this as they wait? I agree. All right. So Solano County prescribed burns addressing lightning complex fire recovery. To make this story short, they're giving permission to do burns, to burn and clear away the vegetation. God has sent a sign. It's at Solano. Your thoughts on this finally happening?
Didn't Trump tell Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom they should have done this a long time ago? Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. Like, okay, the heavens have opened up and they've seen the light. I think they just, Gavin Newsom sees 2028. That's what he sees. He sees his presidential aspirations. And if he can rehabilitate it by doing the right thing here, you know, he's going to do the right thing.
And even if this isn't him, he'll take credit for it.
Oh, you will. Absolutely.
Or maybe this was Pope Leo. Oh, yeah. Give me 13 Hail Marys. Oh, open up. All right. If you don't understand what I'm saying, go listen to Fired Up episode 79 when I give my take on Pope Leo. Don't listen to it if you're Catholic. All right. U.S. first fire. Oh. The first fire-resistant neighborhood has been built in Escondido. And I put this because I want to see an actual fire go through. Nah, I don't mean that literally. But I want to see how, you know, it's one thing to say it's fire-resistant. Well, so is metal until it's 3,000 heat degree fire burning through there. So this is developed by KB Homes. It's a 64-home Dixon Trail. People, to the audience out there nationwide or in California, this is right down the road from where G and I live. So I got excited. It's funded. Obviously, California can't do squat by themselves. Neither can private business. It's funded part of these type of businesses. It's funded partly by a FEMA grant. And, oh, gee, they drew inspiration from the 2003 Cedar Fire. You know, it just seems like an oxymoron. Well, we watch them burn down. We got an idea. You know? Your thoughts on the first in the nation fire resist, it's not fireproof, fire-resistant neighborhood.
You said 2003 Cedar Fire, not 2023? Yeah. You mean 22 years ago? They finally learned the lesson?
It took them that long to get the grant approved. They must have gone through California.
No, you're right. I mean, obviously, if there's a raging fire down the street from you, your house is going to be consumed even with this, right? I mean, most likely that's going to happen because even metal roofs, they're going to get too hot. But really what I've seen in these fires is embers blow a quarter mile, half a mile, a mile down the road and land on someone's roof. And if it is a metal roof, it's not going to burn and it's not going to start a new fire. And I think that this is the right thing to do in Escondido. And actually, as I was reading through these notes, I was thinking, man, fire insurance companies, what they should do is negotiate contracts with contractors to say, hey, we'll insure you, but we want to fireproof your house. So we're going to get this really low negotiated rate, kind of like, what do you call it? When you go to the doctor for, you know, just for checkup and physical, right? So you're just being preemptive. You're just doing a preventative treatment. So now you spend $20,000 fixing up your house. That's better than fire insurance company having to spend $1 million or $800,000 to rebuild your house from embers. So I think this is the right thing to do. And what they should do, and I think there's a PDF with the link that you gave me of how to fireproof your house. Like that should Correct. Be sent out to everybody and say, look, you can get lower fire insurance rates or get fire insurance, period, if you follow these rules and fireproof your house or fire resist your house.
Final question, G. You too can own one of these homes that start at what? Any idea?
I will say, well, this is nowadays, so I'm going to say 900,000.
Close to it for only $1 million. Oh my That's God. Where the prices start, which knocks out 90% of the state.
If not is that a $1 million neighborhood, like that area? Of
it's Escondido? A nice area, but it's Escondido. Escondido is not a $1 million. There are $1 million homes in certain parts of Escondido because they're out in the rural, but you have your land with it too. Here you don't. This is, I think it's just the cost based on the fire resistant.
Right.
Damn.
Wow, that's expensive.
Yeah.
But your house will be there during the next fire.
Not even rich homes. What's that?
Your house will still be there during the next fire.
All right. Tesla driver arrested in Hawaii after early release from Southern California charges. I brought this one up. Again, he had an early – this was a guy in a Tesla. He was assaulting, picking specifically to do his road rage on women, putting them in danger. He was sentenced, got released early, moved to Hawaii. He's doing it again. Gee, the reason I put this down is what's – two reasons. One, again, another great campaign tactic to piggyback on the proposition that was just passed to get strong with gun laws. But more importantly, also to show the public, Democrats don't care about your safety. This was in Honolulu, but this, he repeated offense. Thoughts?
I mean, the first thought I had, and it's actually very unrelated to what you're asking about, but Tesla driver? Have you ever seen that story that says Toyota driver has road rage from his Toyota? I think they referenced the name Tesla at least 8 times in the story. They wanted to make it known
that
this guy was a Tesla driver and not a Toyota driver, which I've never seen that. The other thing I think I've seen is SUV driver because they have their anti-SUV bias. But no, I think he attacked, what was it, mother and daughter in Hawaii? Or was that?
Yes. And there may have been a baby in the back. And real quick, G, it was from 2022 to 2023. He targeted 10 victims, mostly women, using a pipe. And it was dash cam footage that aided in his conviction. And to address your Tesla, you are correct. They did do that. But here's the catch. In 2022 to 2023, Elon was still a leftist. And that was probably a bleeding heart leftist Antifa wannabe.
Right. No, I mean, you attacked 10 victims and the threshold must be high to get thrown in jail for a lengthy amount of time for assault. It's absurd. And then this mother and daughter would have been, you know, fine if that hadn't happened, but he served less than a year, released what, in August 28th, 2024. So it's terrible. I hope he's thrown in the slammer for at least 10, 15 years because to me, if you're using a pipe to attack people, that's attempted murder. You're not attacking someone with a pipe just to hurt them a little bit.
And here's the other thing, G, I saw a picture of him. I don't know how tall he is, but he looks pretty muscular, fit, in shape. He's not somebody you could just – some fat slob just pop on the head. Well, that said, you don't know who has a glass jaw or not. But as you said with the pipe, that's
– And that's a mean-looking mugshot. I mean, it was a really – he looks like a tough dude.
Yes. Yes. Okay. San Diego budget mismanagement, Mrs. Trash, and other fee collections. I tried to get a local story in here once, people. And my whole point with this story is incompetent. When government says they want to do a program, do everything through your representative to say no. San Diego's budget mismanagement included uncollected trash and other fees, exacerbating our financial strain. What I'm trying to say here is they keep raising our taxes. And they're not collecting the fees from certain organizations that owe them. So, for example, they keep raising our trash pickup fee, but they're not even collecting the taxes from the pickup companies that service us. So they're charging us more and they're not collecting that. Now this is only a few million dollars, but that adds up. This is just one. How many other organizations or agencies that they're not properly collecting taxes on that they should? But for us, they just keep raising the taxes.
Yeah, I mean, ever since San Diego went from a red county to a blue county, things have gone downhill quick. And so I added all this up. This is about $22 million in uncollected fees, right? But the budget deficit is $258 million. I mean, you're talking less than 10%. So they could collect that, and even if they collected every single dollar, they would still be 90% of that in the hole. And so the mayor doesn't want to do anything about cutting salaries, cutting headcount, using AI to be more efficient. I mean, we need lean, mean, efficient government here in California, or actually here in San Diego. I remember Jerry Sanders, when he was facing a budget shortfall, he looked at the pension problem and said, well, not only now, but in the future, we're going to have a big problem. So, so he readjusted all the pension payouts that would happen, which probably are happening right now. And even after all that fixing, there's still this huge deficit. It's terrible. And Todd Gloria, I don't think he's going to do anything about it. I think he's just going to limp along to the election and hang on that this is a blue county now, and or blue city, actually. He's mayor of San Diego City, and that he'll be reelected.
I agree. You know, Jerry Sanders was probably playing the game. Hey, I'll make your budget, your pension fatter there, here, little lady. For those of you that don't know Jerry Sanders. Oh, I'm sorry, not Jerry Sanders. I'm thinking of Bob Filner. Sorry, Jerry, not you. I'm thinking of Bob Filner.
who died. Did you catch that?
Yes, he just passed away. We covered that last week,
But, okay. But did you catch the thing? He died at least, I think it was a week before it was announced in the news.
And
one of the San Diego guys here, he found out about it and posted it on Facebook, and I think that's how the news media found out. But Filner fell from grace. Anyways, that's not one of the topics, but just wanted to bring that up real quick.
Well, it's a good point that I tell people. Fame is fleeting, and in politics you do get a level of fame and infamy. So enjoy your moment in the sun, because you will be forgotten. Some of the greatest actors, some of the richest, most influential actors, for example, of the silent era, you couldn't tell me who they are. Clark Gable, half the people will know. Well, they know maybe him because Gone with the Wind. But Cary Grant, probably not. You know, all kinds. So enjoy your time here. And apologies again, Mr. Sanders there. In fact, I think he just retired from being the Chamber Board of Commerce, some big position there. All right, Trump's proposed tariffs. Gee, I just put this on here because it happened. We don't really know how this is going to happen in terms of tax or putting tariffs on films done overseas. So it's just in the exploratory phase, but it's got all of Hollywood jumping anger. But the theater companies, it may not be in here in my other podcast covering the cultural events, movies. You know, the theaters, they're kind of happy. Because they lost $200 million last year. They're like, let's get some movies done here, better quality out, so they can come back to the theaters. But this is not a big story as much as I wanted it out there because of the California film industry. Any thoughts on your side?
I mean, I'm with you. I don't understand how this is going to work. I don't think a lot of people do. But what's bizarre to me is Hollywood has so much TDS, they don't realize he's trying to protect their industry. And it's all like 98% liberal actors and writers and all that. So he's trying to protect their industry. But this is America. Like, I don't know how much this is going to affect it because, you know, we've talked about Shah Rukh Khan from India. And, like, nobody in America knows who he is except for you and I and a lot of my fellow Indian friends. But he's the third highest paid. What's that?
Good-looking man.
Yeah, and he's the third highest paid actor in the world. And more people know about him than most of our actors and actresses here in America, save I think it's Tom Cruise and maybe Schwarzenegger. But outside of that, like Shah Rukh Khan, have you ever heard of him? If you haven't, I mean, his movie's not going to have a tariff on it. Like,
you know,
does that really
funny?
Protect anyone?
I didn't know his name until you said it the other day. But I knew him from the 90s traveling to when I was diving. In the 2000s, you know, you go overseas, you get international flights, all the Indian movies. I knew his face. I knew who he was by his face. And then I knew how rich and powerful he was when I looked him up. I'm like, holy mackerel, this guy owns a cricket team. He's this, he's that. And a guy, well, I don't know what the hell it is with the water over there. The guy looks young as hell. He still looks up.
I think he's 60 or 59 and he looks like he's 40. Around there, So
yeah,
if you guys want to Google who he is, maybe the name is too difficult. SRK, those are his initials, and everybody also refers to him as SRK.
So I think, G, before I move on this one, is I think he's trying to keep movies from being made overseas. But here's the catch-22. These are all bleeding-heart Democrats. They'll never push California to lower its taxes or Georgia, the actors, because they're the ones who we see on the screen. Because they're not the ones funding or making the movies, you know. And even Paramount and all those, they play the leftist game. And they don't care how much our taxes get raised because they're okay with flying over to Romania, to Bulgaria, to do these movies. So maybe if Trump can change that, it can create a ripple effect where they start going, hold on, California, it's way too much here. You need to lower it, you know? So who knows? But I think it's a non-starter right now. All right, international students reconsider U.S. travel plans. I put this here because California schools are some of the most popular around the world. Get a lot of foreigners. Literally the biggest complaint I hear from parents with kids my age is, oh, those ages, man, they won't let us American kids in. And my take is like, well, I don't think it's the money as much as they're just a different culture and your kid's 1.8 GPA just ain't gonna cut it. But my point is these foreign kids, we're afraid to travel now. Gee, this is bull crap. I'm like, if you're not sitting there intimidating, threatening Jews like the ones in Colombia are, and those have, you have nothing to worry about. I think this is the media creating scenarios of fear. Your thoughts?
No, absolutely. And then referring to Garcia as a Maryland man, Maryland family man who got somehow thrown into El Salvadorian prison by Trump. You're going to find your way into that prison if you go from ASU to Colorado for vacation. I mean, that's absurd because of two totally different things. He was here and others illegally. Now, if the students are past their student visa, they're also here illegally. But if you're not, then you're fine. And so, you know, I think it is a total media overblown situation. And, you know, 6 months from now, this will be over. I mean, you know, there'll be enough stories out there that's like, okay, this is not happening en masse or whatever. I'm sure a mistake or two will happen here and there and they'll be corrected, you know, along the way. But, yeah, this is hysteria. I have a friend who texted me saying, I have to carry my passport around because I don't want to get deported while I'm out in the streets of New York. And I'm like, really? You think, I mean, you're a U.S. citizen. He's like, yeah, but I don't talk like a U.S. citizen. And I'm like, okay, you have an accent. Great. So does my mom. We're not afraid here. So you don't need to be afraid either.
Exactly. You know, the Democrats and these students, they, you know, well, tell me about Jeffrey Dahmer. Oh, he just likes exotic foods. But he's a good Democrat. Or a serial killer, you know. Oh, no, he just has some minor anger issues. Let me know what here. Here's your ballot, bud. Go vote Democrat. I mean, that's how they view it. All right, our last story of the night. UCLA Medical School faces lawsuit over racial discrimination using zip codes. So UCLA got around and were able to become racist bigots and discriminate against Asians and whites by not saying we're going to have blacks the game entry and Latinos the game entry. We're not favoring them. What they were doing is they were using the zip code to favor them. Oh, there's this zip code. Well, what's the zip code? That's Compton. Yeah. That's Barrio Logan there. Y'all welcome. Come on in. You're approved. I mean, that's what they were doing. And they got busted. And now they are being sued. So data shows from 2020 to 2023 that white and Asian applicants, 73% of the pool, dropped the 54% matriculants by 2023. That's almost a 25% drop. I mean, it's clear there are shenanigans. That's not a natural drop. Your thoughts on this final story, G?
So I don't have the story open up in front of me, but I remember reading the quote by the person who was doing this or one of the people. She said, but we need those people here. We need more of those people here. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay.
Oh, the doctors. Gee, that's what they said. They're like, there's a lot of blacks who do this and get medical or something, so we need a lot of black doctors, as if they needed the black doctors to relate to them.
Sure, but yeah, I mean, there's a sense of like, okay, who are you comfortable with as your primary care doctor or whatnot? But Supreme Court has already ruled that you cannot admit or refuse to admit someone based on their skin color. So this is the loophole, right? Well, zip code, okay, Compton. All right, so it's most likely somebody that I want to let in because I have my certain worldview. Now, I believe that the people that they're talking about didn't actually qualify based on their grades.
Right?
When I read that in the story, right? Their grades and their exam scores. So I just want to ask anybody in the audience, like, okay, if you're going to get a procedure, I mean, wouldn't you want the best or someone who just barely made it through? I mean, I don't care what skin color they are. If they're not that good at book work, then how good are they going to be at cutting you open and making sure you don't bleed to death after the surgery is over or whatnot? I just got knee surgery a week and a half ago, and I trusted this guy. This guy seemed really good, and he did a great job. So I don't care what skin color you are or what gender you are. If you can't do the work, you can't do the work. If you can't do the work, you can't do the work. And those are the people who should be elevating based on merit, not on zip code, because I guess technically it's not based on race. It's based on zip code.
That's just a way around it.
Wink, wink.
Yeah. So to the audience, and I'm being serious, we joke a lot, but if you're black or Latino, you don't want this, because what's starting to happen, and I saw it on X, and this was like a couple months ago, I said, you want the white doctor because you can't trust the education and the graduation level of a Latino or a black doctor who are just being pushed out without understanding or knowing what they're practicing. So you always go to the white doctor, and that creates stereotypes. So when this happens, you're only hurting your own culture by supporting them. And I'm not saying that to hurt white or black or brown or black. It's we want the best. If you're black, I want you to succeed. If you're white, I want you to succeed. Why? Because the baby boomers are coming, people, and we don't have enough doctors. And that's just a simple fact of life. So every qualified doctor out there should know and understand. And when people are being pushed through, lawsuits are going to happen. Mistrust is going to happen. All that. Thomas Sowell talks about this type of stuff all the time. And to me, he's one of this generation's greatest economists. And he's a black man out of Harlem who was a Marxist to start and realized that doesn't work. And to further my point of why this is wrong, one professor said that a student in the operating room could not identify a major artery when asked, then berated the professor for putting her on the spot. I'm that professor, I'm fail, and I would fight the school tooth and nail. Another said that students at the end of their clinical rotations don't know basic lab tests and in some cases are unable to present patients. The professor who got hired, when he got hired, within 3 years, this is the admitting guy, UCLA G dropped from 6th to 18th place. So what are your thoughts on what I just said? I'm not saying that they're hurt anybody. I'm saying this is an ugly truth that's a ramification created by thinking you're helping somebody when you're not. You're just going to kill somebody down the road. Your thoughts?
No, I mean, someone needs to be at an institution that meets their skill level. And so, you know, if you can hack it at – and I'll give you this example. So UCSD, I remember I was arguing affirmative action law. I was there with a friend of mine who was a minority. And his attack on me after about 10 minutes is like, well, you got in. Why – you know, telling me I got in because of affirmative action, so why am I hating on a policy?
Yeah, sure.
And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. I got a 4.5 GPA. I got a high SAT score, 1320. I didn't get in because of affirmative action. I got in because of my scores.
That's right.
That's one. Two, I'm Indian. We don't fall into minority status. We're my model minority status, which means I don't get a leg up. So he was actually trying to insult me in saying that, but I think I think they have, you know, whoever it might be gets in there because of their race. might have an inferiority complex. Like, okay, well, I'm only here because of my skin color. And like what you said is like, well, how can you trust that I'm actually good enough to be here? Right. And I'm sure there's plenty of people of all races who are good enough. But if someone gets in because, oh, we just need a couple people from that zip code or that zip code, and then they get there and then they're getting D's because while in high school, they were only getting B's and C's. Now they're getting D's in college. Well, yeah, of course your ranking is going to go down as a university. So it just makes sense. Put people, meet them at their skill level, and that's where they should be. That's where they will thrive. And if you push someone too hard, like, okay, get into Harvard, even though you're getting B's and C's in high school, they're not going to do that well there. They'll probably drop out after the first or second year. Is that an AI image?
I just found a picture of G where he did all his studying at local 7-Eleven. I'm terrible. You see 7-Eleven? It's blurry, but it's there in the corner.
That looks like that looks like a Smart and Final, actually.
I'm poking fun at G, only because G is actually the exact opposite of all of that. And if we can't make, dude, you know how many times I heard Deplar? If you could wrestle as good as it took you to swim across that border, you'd be somebody. I heard that every day from my high school coach in wrestling.
Well, I mean, okay, so that's a great example. So getting into the NFL, right? And you look at the demographics there. And you go, wait a minute, like, the whites are what in this country are 65% of the population?
Oh, yeah, 70% when you count it all.
Okay, but in the NFL, they're like 50%. So they're a lot less. And then, you know, there's like zero Indians, and we're like 1% of the population. So there should be at least one Indian, damn it, in the NFL.
We have a couple Latinos in there.
But you don't put us in there. We're like Gandhi, right? We're like skinny little people who are afraid to get hit. You don't put us in there because we will get crushed and your team will lose. Don't do it. You get the good people in there.
Don't let shirk hands. SRK hear you say that. He said, boy, come here. I'll show you a thing or two. Yeah, I'm just picking on G. But the point is, I hate to say it, people, but traditionally and maybe stereotypically speaking, it seems like we're always referring to black and brown as the underserved. And that angers me because I'm like, there's nothing that separates a black and brown from a brown Indian or a yellow Asian or a white Jew or whatever. My point is it's a different culture, but we can strive to do as well as those cultures. And instead of trying to uplift our communities, to work with those communities to better us, it seems, G, like we make victims out of those communities, give them favors by giving them entrances when they don't qualify for it. And in the end, we're doing nothing but hurting that. And I'm not one of these kumbaya people, but I know as a country, if we can maximize our talent, we can become, there's no country that can match who and what we do. And people, believe it or not, we are, what's that saying, G? We're the bastion, the light at the top of the hill. That is America. There's a reason G's ancestors, my ancestors are really just one generation back, but my ancestors, you know, we all came to this great country. It's because of the opportunity. And instead of granting favors that create more hurt and angst and financial hardships with the loans, if you're a failed doctor, you still got to pay those loans. We have to start looking at methods to bring the quality of our education up to par. Any final words, G, before we close the show out?
No, again, it's all about merit, right? And even if it's someone from Compton that got a 4.5 GPA and scored high on all their tests and all that, they deserve a spot at the UCLA David Geffen School of Medicine. But if they're pulling them in and other people are saying, wait, their grades suck, that's a bad reason to pull someone in.
You're right, and it bothers me that they won't look at that issue. Well, we got to strengthen our education system. Instead, they'll fight this is what Jemele Hill. This is why they belong over that 4.5. That one kid, you saw, we talked about it, I think, that one kid, all these Harvard leagues turned him down and all that, and they got like some super job at Google, you know, right after high school, because he'd been rejected from all these universities. And, the discrimination has got to stop at every level. And with that, my friends, I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank G. G is my floating host, co-host here on Fired Up, where we talk about national politics as well as local politics or state politics here in Fired Up, California. G, before I let you go, tell the people how they can find you and tell them what board you hold.
Yeah, you can find me on X at SDGOP. I mostly retweet. I don't produce my own content, and I'm also on a local school board here in Rancho Santa Fe, enjoying my 6th year on the board. So it's a fun time.
Exactly. The G-Man. G-Man, thank you for joining us. To everybody else, do not forget, bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. You can find this podcast and the other podcast, Fired Up, that G and I co-host together. Every Friday night, we live stream. Check that out. But you can find us at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. Until next week, my friends, keep your eye, keep your head on the swivel because we're close to the border. for the G-Man and myself, I am William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up California, and I bid you adieu.